everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about episode 2 of 1984, the aptly named Mr. Jingles, which, like, he's involved in the episode, but I don't really like the core conceit.
Yeah, he's less involved in this episode than the last episode, which he wasn't. It wasn't named Mr. Jingles. He's less involved in this one, I would say. I think he shows up for maybe 2 scenes. And one of those scenes, he's not even interacting with anybody.
Yeah. So I'm joined, as always, by Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. And I'm Ty Tuesday. Hello.
Hello.
This episode starts with a moment that immediately reminded me of one of my favorite posts, which is, men in LA, get off your phones and stop becoming influencers. We need gaffers. These shows dark as hell. I can't see shit. And that is immediately how this episode opens up. I watch on a little tablet and I turned that bad boy's brightness up to 100. And then I was like, fuck it. 130%. And it's like, are you sure you're going to blow battery? I'm like, I don't know if I am, man. It's just like a black screen. Like, I can't see a damn thing. It is outrageously dark. And like, for really no good reason. Like, it's legitimately like not hard. It's not like dark to make a point. It's just like hard to see literally anything going on. Like, you're like, where's that car coming from? Oh, okay, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. And like, I was thinking about it because at like multiple points during this episode, the characters say fuck. And I'm like, were we saying fuck on TV when this came out? Like, I don't remember being able to say fuck on TV. So I was like, was this a streaming thing? Were we already streaming this at this point? I couldn't remember.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think it was on FX.
FX?
I mean, like,
I know. I was just going to say, FX was better about cursing, but I always felt like the F word was still, like, you know, verboten for whatever reason. You know, like, I know they were like, shit, ass, all that, but, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they, like, maybe did that, like, skip censor. Not like a bleep, but, you know, where they just kind of, you know, that kind of thing. But
yeah,
I'm honestly not sure, actually.
I want to say that, like, FX at a certain point, probably around this time, if I had to guess, for their shows that aired really late at night, like anything past like 9 p.m., which I think this did. I think it aired at 9 p.m.
Wow.
They let like one fuck per episode. But they say fuck a lot in this episode, which I'm like, I don't think we were saying fuck that much. Like now when shows are on like Netflix and stuff, they can say fuck as much as they want. It doesn't matter. But I was like, man, they're saying fuck a lot.
What if you make a show so bad that none of the censors watch the whole thing?
True.
And they just go, yeah, all right. There's probably like one in there. They're like 8 seasons deep. They haven't tried to fuck us yet. So it's probably fine.
It's one of those things that was on cable so the FCC wouldn't get involved, but like advertisers didn't like it. Just kind of like a cursory Google says that like at one point, Tony Shalhoub, apparently, like the guy who played Monk, was on the board at FX. And then he left, and after that, they're like, apparently in 2016 or maybe even sooner, FX started just saying, okay, fuck, and then we're just doing it, you know? So
we're allowed to say it. Tony Shalhoub said we can say fuck.
I can't believe the monk with the detective with OCD was what kept us in check from saying fuck too much. That's crazy.
That seems right. That feels right. That feels correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but where I was going.
Not Tony Shalhoub. It was Monk. Whenever he went in the boardroom, he was fully in character.
Yeah. They were like, please, Tony, please just talk normal. And he's like, no.
No, I am Monk today.
And
every
day.
This is what I sound like when I'm going Monk mode.
Should have got me when I was on Wings, boys. Sorry, but
huge. Yeah, where I was going with that tangent about it being on TV versus being on streaming is like, since streaming and like shows airing on streaming services versus on cable TV became a thing, there's been an epidemic of shows being so fucking dark that you can't tell what's going on ever, like in any TV show. But like, I want to say this is American Horror Story being ahead of the curve, where they were like, we're going to make our show unfucking watchable before anyone else does it. We're going to get ahead of the game and make our show unfucking watchable. Like, I'm not joking. My first note in the notes for today's show is, it's so dark, I have no idea what's going on. And that's not me being hyperbolic. It's that I genuinely could not tell what was happening on the screen. I'm like, there's some noises happening, but they're not noises that are distinct enough for me to have context clues to know what's happening. But also, I can't fucking see what's happening. And it's not even something that's like, this needs to be insanely dark. It's just the doctor, Dr. Hopper, the lady from the last episode, who's like, oh, good thing Mr. Jingles left a newspaper clipping to tell me exactly where he was going to go. She just pulls up at the camp. And also, this is going to fucking bother me. I just want to get mad about it right now so I don't have to be mad about it. But I am going to be mad about it for the rest of the episode. This all takes place, like, right at, like, it picks up exactly where we left off, basically. It's, like, maybe 30 minutes later from the last episode. It's not raining. And it's also bone dry everywhere.
And I'm like, yeah.
30 minutes ago? And probably still, like, we even, like, when the last scene is, when we see Richard Ramirez going, Satan, 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 it's downpouring.
So I wanted to check something real quick. And so I have a pet theory that a reason a lot of shows got too fucking dark was the introduction of HDR TVs, like the high dynamic range ones, where they're like, whoa, you can display 300 different color blacks that a normal TV would just show as a blob of black that's totally inscrutable. So people like started filming for HDR. And that was in 2016, and this show came out in 2019. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a non-zero chance they had started filming on like HDR equipment and stuff. And they're like, yeah, looks good on our end. And then as soon as it ships to any non-HDR, HDR TV, because like that technology did not get picked up as widely as they thought it would. Everything looks like shit.
Yeah. So,
like, I kind of want to blame HDR TVs for this. And before anyone with an HDR TV comes after me, I don't care. Too bad. Sorry you bought a TV that made TV annoying.
I think you're onto something. Again, just like doing very preliminary Googling without typing true out or trying, is that like, yeah, it seems like digital video and HDR kind of hit around this time and nobody was great at it on either end of like the encoding or the filming. So you ended up with a lot of shit that's like way too dark and stuff and no way of fixing it because people didn't have those TVs, etc. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And like the thing about it is also I feel like there were some shows that like lent themselves, like movies were bad about it too. Like when we started getting like The Dark Knight and stuff, like they started to do that as an aesthetic choice of like, oh, everything is very like monochromatic and very like dark and hard to see and like gritty. I would like to say, all that aside, American Horror Story has proven time and time again they're dog shit at post-processing. Their day-to-night and night-to-day shots, dog shit-ass doo-doo. And their special effects, dog shit-ass doo-doo. So I just think they're bad. I think that this was shot poorly. Maybe this is why they always did like night-into-day shots, because they didn't know how to shoot at night.
I was going to say, do you think, because like, I like to think that this season seems to be a reaction to how awful the last one was, because like, oh, you hate it when we have our own original ideas. Fine, we'll just rip stuff off for a whole season. Oh, you hate when we day into night shot because we just make everything look light blue and that's not what the night looks like. Fine, we'll actually film at night. Do you like this?
Oh, no, I don't. It's impossible to fucking see.
We can't please you people.
Yeah, you guys don't like anything. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, well, kind of, yeah. But then, you're so close to getting it.
Like when they have their own twist on things, not to get too ahead, but like, you know, they don't need much excuse to have Brooke go to the camp because this is already specious to begin with, but they decide they have to add the Richard Ramirez thing to it.
They had to.
And then like, okay, fine, you got your plot device to get her to the camp, but then he like follows her there, which is like, well, why do we need this? Like, isn't Mr. Jingles enough? Like, he needs like a little tag team partner already? Like, what are we doing? But, you know,
super smash. Smash Brothers intro.
Arrival.
My God.
Yay.
Slow Beef, I have this story about a woman who swallowed a fly. You're not going to believe how it ends.
I don't know if we really talked about her too much last episode, because she really didn't do much except for like touch the floor where Mr. Jingles was in a cell and then be like, he's going to the camp, which is like information that anybody could have figured out. I will preemptively say that for anyone who's not like super versed in horror, this character is clearly supposed to be an analog for Dr. Loomis from Halloween. She's like very explicitly like supposed to be, she beat for beat in the first episode does exactly what Dr. Loomis does, where she goes to the psych ward where Michael Myers was being held and escaped from, and is like, did he get out? And they're like, yeah, but it's probably fine. And then she's like, no, it's not fine. He's going to go back to where he did a bunch of murders. That's just Dr. Loomis from Halloween. The difference between this character and Dr. Loomis from Halloween is it's not clear what this guy or like what her relationship to this guy is. Dr. Loomis was Michael Myers's psychiatrist since he was 4 years old. Because that's when he did his first murder.
Bang up job, Dr. Loomis does too.
Yeah, he does
great psychiatrist, but
does
yeah,
a great job. But because he knows Michael Myers so intimately, he's like, we gotta get that guy fucking back. We cannot have that guy out and about. Like, I know what that dude is up to and what he's gonna get up to. We gotta fucking deal with it.
And the other thing, too, is, like, Michael Myers is, like, clearly, like, super fucked up, right? Like, it's one of those cases of, like, if we let this guy out, it's going to be really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Jingles just seems like, shit, there's a guy who killed a couple people out. Like, that's no good, but it's not like, we got to rally all the King's horses and all the King's men. This guy's going to be a huge issue.
I know,
it's just
kinda
like, oh, fuck. A regular man is out.
Yeah.
And he has ill will.
Yeah, and, okay. Like, he wants to do a crime probably again. But, like, we know where he's going to do it, so we should probably just focus our efforts there, if we're being honest.
Call the cops. He's just a guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, so, like, I don't know why
she's... I cannot emphasize enough that he is just a guy. That will be so relevant for the rest of the season, is that he's just a guy. But, yeah, going back to the Dr. Loomis thing... So Dr. Loomis, for the entirety of the Halloween franchise, until he meets his untimely demise, is just being God's biggest hater towards Michael Myers because he knows Michael Myers so well. And, like, his character is this, like, he's like a trope in horror that exists in many medias, where it's, like, not the main character. They're not the final girl. They're not the hero. But they are, like, a secondary character. Like, in Saw, it's Detective Tapp, where it's a character who's, like, a detective or a psychiatrist or something that has a vested interest in stopping the big bad. But they are not the main character. And they have kind of a parallel plot going on with the main cast, where they are also trying to stop the big bad, but they have, like, they're doing their own thing and getting it up to their own shenanigans. And that usually culminates with when that character usually ends up dying or, like, meets an untimely death. It's supposed to have, like, a little bit of weight because you're like, damn, like, they obviously can't live based on, like, how these movies usually go because the hero has to live. But, like,
right.
They had some skin in the game and, like, you were kind of still rooting for them and, like, hoping they got something out of it.
Or, like, if it's sometimes, like, I even like it when it's, like, if they have some knowledge of the big bad or some, like, kind of helpful thing, and it's, like, this is probably the person who has the best shot at fighting back. Oh, they're dead. Shit. And it makes it more dire, you know?
Yeah.
But
There is some weight to the character. The character exists is what I'm getting at. Is the this specific trope and this specific type of character, like the Harbinger, serves a purpose. They are a trope, but they do serve a purpose narratively. They're not just like, what if there was a psychiatrist who also knew this guy?
Right?
It kind of reminds me of back in Cult, there was a character who shows up for roughly 30 seconds who is like the person who's like the mayor of the town or something. The lady who like
the weed smoking lady.
Weed smoking lady who's like, yeah, I'll just go kill him, whatever. And she's like clearly the authority figure who will maybe figure it out. And then they just like explode her 30 seconds later. Like they're trying to do this.
Yeah.
They just don't understand that like it's not enough to have somebody be like, oh yeah, no, I have the cult ending rifle. Let me go get that. Oh shit, I left it in my other pants, and then they die. Like,
and my clown shield is down. This sucks. Wow.
Oh, not my clown shield.
This sucks so bad. Yeah. So we're going into this knowing that. I want you guys to know this character is a Dr. Loomis analog, but she will serve 0% of the purpose of Dr. Loomis or any character like this. I don't remember what this trope is called, but it has a name. Like this character, we don't know how she knows Mr. Jingles or why she's involved in this. We don't know why no one is listening to her when she's like, we gotta fucking go to that camp. He's gonna do another crime. Whereas with Dr. Loomis, like, the problem was that, like, the police didn't care. They were like, that's crazy. He wouldn't do that. And then he's like, he would. Michael Myers would, actually. And he does. Michael Myers does. That's the problem.
Like, the police would be more right here in the Halloween police would be more right here if they were involved, because it's just like, look, it's just some guy, all right? You know? And they're like, well, yeah, granted, but he does have a knife. You're like, all right, we'll go over there, I guess, you know?
But also, literally put a pin in that exact thought for roughly 5 minutes from now when something plays on the TV, because I have thoughts about that exact thing. So anyway, the doctor is like, I'm at the camp now, and we don't have environmental storytelling to tell us that this is the same day and roughly like 30 minutes later, because it's no longer downpouring rain, which it was at the end of the last episode, and also no puddles, it's not wet anywhere, bone dry, so there's no indicator that this is the same day. And she knocks on the door of, like, I call it the camp owner's cabin, but it's just where Margaret lives, I guess, the lady who runs the camp. No one answers the door.
You know, the general's cabin?
Yeah, the general's cabin.
They have for the general of the army? Oh, yeah. I mean the camp, sorry. Yeah, that's not like a thing. Like, it would be like, yeah, I have my own bespoke cabin that only I go into, and I lock the doors, and if somebody tries to snoop around in my room, I'll act really weird about it. Like, it's like, okay, so she's gonna freak out about someone being in her quote-unquote room. This is a camp for teens, right? You know what teens do, right? They break into places. Like, they'll find a way. Mm-hmm. They're very good at this one task.
Yeah, they love to poke around, especially if they're unsupervised and have like lots of free time, like you usually do at a summer camp that isn't super structured. Yeah. The closest thing I can think
finding of is places to make out and finding places to break into, the two activities.
Yes, and things to set on fire sometimes, or break.
And tubing.
Yeah, and tubing.
Tubing.
And tubing. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And tubing. Like, I've been to summer camps in the past that, like, sometimes the people who own the camp will have, like, a house on some property, like, near the camp, like as you're coming into the camp, but it's not a cabin, yeah. And it's not like readily available for the campers to just walk up to. But I guess Margaret lives on premises. And the doctor, Dr. Hopper, is like, I'll just let myself in since no one answered. This is important. And she's like, I'm looking for Margaret Booth. And then they do a fucking jump scare of having Margaret just pop out of the shadows. And I'm like, was she just like standing behind that door like waiting for this? Like, what a dick. She's like, were you gonna snoop in my bedroom? And I'm like, what a fucking insane thing to ask this person.
Yes.
Yeah, at that point, if someone asked me that, I'd be like, yeah, I was, like, just to fuck with them, because what
right,
do you
yeah.
mean
no,
like
agree.
Like, yeah, I was, that's why I'm here. And she's like, no, I've been trying to call you because something important is going on, but all the phone lines are busy. And Margaret's like, damn, that's crazy. You drove up here because you couldn't get a hold of me. So something must be like super important then. And then Hopper's like, yeah, that guy who killed a lot of people and tried to kill you has escaped. And he's super obsessed with you, and he is gonna definitely come here and try to kill you, so you need to shut the camp down so the kids and you don't get hurt. And Margaret goes, no, I got that dog in me, and she pulls a gun
tough
out.
Titties.
Yeah.
tough titties, I'm built different, and pulls a revolver out of the desk, and it's like, okay, but you're not everywhere. Like, you're not omnipresent, so, like, relax.
Yeah. I do think it's really funny, though, because she just, like, nonchalantly pulls the revolver out and goes, God helps those who help themselves. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck yeah, Margaret. Like, more people in horror movies should have this kind of attitude of like, fuck it, we ball, let him come. It's almost Laurie Strode energy, but not quite. It still has like a weird, like, religious lady, like, vibe to it. And she's like, yeah, if that motherfucker shows up here, I'm just gonna straight up kill him. And like, fair enough. And then Hopper's reaction to this is insane. She does not say anything. She just goes like, huh, and then turns and like storms out of the house.
Well,
and I'm like,
I've done all I can do.
Yeah, I'm like, are you mad at Margaret? Like, what is your motivation here? Like, what is your plan now to, like, go
also,
get the cops?
She doesn't try to, like, warn anyone else either. Like, she's not like, well, are there other people here that I could inform there's a serial killer coming for them since you seem to not give a shit? She literally is just like, it's cool, I got it. And she's like, oh, what a crock of shit. I'm going. I tried. Gets in her car and drives off. It's so great. Like, imagine if, like, the psychologist for, like, Hannibal Lecter was just like, you know what? It's fine. He'll probably be okay out there. Like,
yeah.
It's like one roadblock and immediately like, I don't give a shit anymore. Like, it's supposed to be your life's mission. That's the whole thing with the psychologist or psychiatrist too deep with the killer thing, right? Is like,
yeah.
it reaches into that like dangerous fascination where you can't let go even if you wanted to. That's like the idea, and this lady's just like, actually, I can let go, and it's quite trivial for me. I'm just going to leave.
Because then you wouldn't do that, right? Because then you're like, I can't get through, so I'll call the police. I'll call someone else whose job it is to do this, you know, because, yeah, if you're that archetype, you're the one obsessed, like, I've got to get there before Mr. Jangles or whatever his name, you know, does. And then, like, because I'm the only one who can stop him because I understand him. But then she's just like, yeah, fine. You know, all right.
Yeah. When I say that the Dr. Loomis from Halloween is God's biggest hater, I mean, he wakes up extra early. He sets his alarm for 4 a.m. to wake up extra early because he hates Michael Myers so much that he shoots an innocent 17-year-old boy who looks like kind of like Michael Myers because he's so, like, lost in the sauce, and then that kid gets hit by a cop car because he shot him. Like, you gotta be, like, in it to win it. And, like, Detective Tapp from Saw, that's his whole deal, is he's too lost in the sauce trying to find Jigsaw. Well, the main characters are currently getting jigsawed. This character is like, well, I've told one person, and now I'm leaving. And she's kind of, like, pissed about it. And I'm like, okay, so, like, do you care? Like, are you gonna maybe look for him? Like, what? Why did you come here?
I'm done. I tried.
Yeah.
See you later.
I tried. Goodbye.
See you later. Like, whoa.
I'm like, what did you? What reaction did you want? I mean, obviously, you wanted her to shut down the camp. But like, what reaction did you want? Like, I would assume, fuck shutting down the camp. I would assume he was already there. Like, maybe. Or was on his way. Like, you need to get out of there. Like, what did you want from her?
It's just bad with people. She, like, she was hoping for, like, you need to shut down the camp. Like, yeah, okay, that sounds good. Like, okay, good, now I can go home. And now that didn't happen. Like,
That's what I wonder. Nope. What would have happened if Margaret was like, oh, hell yeah, that's fucked up, I'm shutting down the camp. Like, what would Hopper have done then? Just been like, oh, I didn't expect to get this far.
Maybe she's really...
See you later.
What if she's, like, really obsessed with a different inmate at that asylum or whatever? You know what I mean? And, like... She's like, oh, but that guy didn't escape. She's like, well, I better do something about Mr. Jingles. And then, you know, I was like, all right, forget it.
I wasted the gas to get here. I went to the psychiatry place and I wasted the gas. Yeah. So I might as well do something. And so she's driving away. She's just fucking leaving. And as they are showing her driving away, they play a gunshot sound effect, which is quite confusing. But this is supposed to be the sound of her tire blowing.
Yeah, it is clearly a gunshot, and this is where I thought, like, oh shit, they're just gonna immediately have Margaret be like a killer right away. She just pulled out a revolver and is like, no one's gonna stop this camp. I was gonna be like, fuck yes, finally some intrigue, having this little lady go out and be like, if you try to stop this camp, I'll fucking kill you. No, though, that is not what's happening, regrettably. It turns out, despite it sounding like a gunshot, it was comedy's largest caltrop. This is that shit that, like, they were using to stop elephants. this is that shit you use to make horses throw off their riders, and they're just like, yeah, oh, Mr. Jingles, yeah, he just has caltrops. Where did he get caltrops?
just one, and it's like enough to, like, get this done.
Which
I'm like,
crazy.
Damn,
like, yeah, like, fucking snipe someone's tires. Well, like, see in the future, like, she will drive over this exact spot. Get him, boys. get him one boy
in the dark
spike
and
strips
in
we
the
had
rain.
In Nam.
Yeah. I cannot overstate in the pouring rain, because it was storming 30 minutes ago minimum. Yeah, huge. And so she blows her tire. And then she just kind of pulls over and is like, oh, well, I guess I live here now. And a truck pulls up behind her from the direction of the camp, and honks the horn.
Goes, wow, that's so convenient. Thank God someone showed up. I was, you know, the whole thing, I thought there was this killer man chasing me, but thank God a good Samaritan has found me and isn't related to this caltrop at all. So let me just roll down my window and, how's it going, cowboy? Like, are you stupid?
Jesus. I cannot overstate, she does not look back at the car or the person. She just kind of yells out the window, yeah, going, wow, I have, she doesn't even like say anything like nice. There's no pleasantries. She's just like, I think I have a flat. Can you fix it? I'm like, fucking rude, Red. First of all. Red. Like, how about a hello? Like,
the random rude person.
Yeah, just a rando. Like, hey, I blew my tire. Can you fix it? You're a man. Can you fix it? I'm not going to try to do it myself. Like, fuck
That's
you.
That. Infamous 1980s chivalry you've heard so much about, you know? Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, lady. Like, no, what?
Also, like, I don't know. Maybe it was different in the 80s, but, like, one of the things that, like, I was taught as, like, a teenager growing up, like, near the Houston area is, like, when you are driving on highways at night that are, like, kind of out, like, towards the edges of the city.
Secluded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you hit something that blows your tire, don't stop, because that's probably a setup to get robbed. Like, don't pull over. Keep going until you're in a safe place, and then deal with it once you're surrounded by people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, or like, if you do have to stop, make sure you at least call the local police station and verify that that is a real cop.
Yeah.
Because that is the other thing is, yeah, you'll just have someone show up and be like, oh yeah, I'm a cop for sure. And then you open the window and they're like, all right, money, please.
Yeah.
Like, if you
and then they'll say, I was a cop. I just also am a robbing cop today.
You know, like, there's
Joker's trick.
There's just no circumstance where you decide, like, hey, can you fix my car? Unknown person? You know what I mean? Like,
well, she was tailing a killer up here. So, like, but wouldn't that be, like, in your mind a little bit? You'd be like, well, I hope the guy who was pretending to be janitorial staff while he murdered people isn't pretending to be janitorial staff while considering murdering people. Well, anyway, hey, stranger in a truck, wanna help me out?
He starts walking up towards the car, does not like try to hide or anything, just straight up walks towards it. She doesn't glance in the rear view one time, but she starts to hear like jingling, and she gets like a look on her face like, what the? And I'm like, do you even know this guy? Do you know what he looks like? Or like have any other information besides his name being Mr. Jingles? Even his name being Mr. Jingles, if you didn't know him, you hear jingling. That should be enough of a tip off. You can put two and two together.
Well, that's the thing. She's probably like in her head like, fuck, that's why they call him that. As like she sees him or something. You know what I mean? Like, I fucked
also,
up.
Like, a blown tire doesn't keep you from driving. It's like bad to do, but if there's a serial killer behind you, you just go, damn, I'm buying new rims when I get back.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to get this fucking axle changed. Oh, well.
Yeah, that is why usually horror movies don't even like entertain that. They just be like, oh, the car won't start. Because if the car won't start, you can't go anywhere. But if you have a flat tire, you can go somewhere. Like, it won't be pretty, and it'll be really bad for your car. But, like, better than getting murdered by Mr. Jingles, IMO. I blew a tire.
So she hears the jingling, and he walks up, and unbelievably, she just, like, doesn't notice the large man who's shaped exactly like Mr. Jingles. She rolls up the window, like, a little bit as he walks up, and then the guy, Mr. Jingles, holds up the fucking caltrop, which again, for those unaware, a caltrop is a military implement and or like something you use to like pop tires intentionally. It's not really an object that can be mistaken for anything else. It's a collection of 4 points in a tetrahedron that's designed to be thrown on the ground and like always point up so that it either fucks up a horse's foot or in the case of modern ones that are like hollow and usually have like place for air to escape out the sides of them to pop tires. So this is something where if he held it up, you'd immediately be like, ah, that's a caltrop. You're here to kill me. I should go.
Does not have any like self-preservation reaction to this at all. She's just like, haha, wow, that's crazy that was on the road. What are the odds that you were so lucky to be here to help me?
Real nice man bun idiot before he turns around and displays his katana from the Shogunate era.
Yeah. Like,
nice caltrop, asshole. Oh, fuck.
That was your caltrop, wasn't it? Yeah. He literally just responds, because Mr. Jingles is just a guy. He talks and everything. He's not like a Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees type. He yaps, which I find to be like not the best for slasher killers, because then it really just makes them just a guy. It's just a fella.
No. Yeah, like that only works for ones that have like magic dream world powers and shit, because they get away with transforming and talking a lot of shit. But if it's just like a very imposing man, there's nothing scarier than a very imposing physical man who is not saying anything and clearly has ill intent. Like, it's so much scarier than if you know his reasoning.
Even the dream monster had to work up to it a little, you know, like he had to be a little foreboding before he could go into like, well, gonna claw your stomach now, with but a pun. Yeah, exactly, right.
They let me talk because I'm nasty. They did the same thing with Chucky. Chucky gets to talk because he's nasty. They're like, you get to be a little nasty. That's your deal, is you get to be a little rude.
You can't be like this guy who was like, you know, was like otherwise like would sell jerky or something. Like, well, you know, I'm going to kill you now, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah. It's terrible. But
because his response to it is like, dare I say, like, I don't know, like a normal person's response, because she's like, wow, I'm so lucky you were out here. What are the odds? Like, nervously. Because, like, I guess she's suspicious this might be Mr. Jingles. And he, like, just deadpan is, like, glaring at her like you would glare at, like, a Karen who, like, cut you off in traffic. And he's like, well, yeah, pretty good, because you followed me out here. Like, he says it, like, just like that, where he's, like, kind of annoyed. And I'm like,
yeah,
you can't make me root for Mr. Jingles.
He feels like a Bob's Burgers side character that like happens to kill people.
Yeah. <He's> like,
I could see this guy being like a rival burger artist.
Right. Just, well, that's it. Because the problem is too, like, he's not like crazy. And I mean, in the like, you know, horror, like killer way, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he's not like, he's just like, some dude, it's like, well, you followed me out here, so I have a reason to kill you. And it's like, no, you don't need a reason. You're supposed to be like, come on, work with me, Mr. Jingles. Like, get scary.
Also, his reasoning for killing people is a fucking mess, but we'll get to that when he, so he goes through, he pulls her out of the window and just kills her, which, great, I'm glad this character was here. She didn't do anything, she didn't help, she didn't convince anyone of anything. I don't know why she's here. And now she's dead.
Yeah.
And then and then his final response is, by the way, I think you were right. I am a monster. Give me that ear. And he cuts off her ear, which, like, again, not very scary to have the guy be like, fuck it. Guess I'm into this killing thing. Great point, Doc. Like, that can be scary, but that character needs to be built for that from the word go. Like, having that be like a scary moment. Instead, it's just kind of like, who's this fucking jack off? Like, who's this fucking wad?
They've kind of like head, the right? Few, like the very few scenes we've seen of like him parentheses real, like in the current day, like the flashback to him like pretending to be dead and then escaping, and then like this is like kind of all of the interaction we've seen with him and other characters so far. He kind of seems like a little bitchy, and like I think that's a very like funny, not funny, haha, funny American Horror Story quality to give your killer, of like being a little grumpy, like not really imposing or like menacing, just like a little grumpy, like a grumpy old
man
who's like kind of pissed off because like he's going to the camp allegedly because he wants revenge, and like that's not really like
that doesn't come through.
Yeah, that's more like John Wick shit. In Halloween, Michael Myers wants to kill Lori because he didn't get to. He wanted to and didn't get to. And he wants to do it because he's fucked up and evil. And he's like, I didn't get to finish the killings I was doing when I was six. I'd like to do them now because I am evil.
This feels more like I'm annoyed that she testified against me and now I'm in jail. So like I feel like I owe her one, which isn't the same as this I need to complete my art kind of like, you know, real out there shit, as opposed to just like, well, I mean, might as well. I owe her one.
Yeah. I got nothing else going on. I was going to be in jail for 900 years or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So she's dead. If anyone cares, and I assume that they don't. The boys are all friends again. It's been roughly 30 minutes and the boys are all friends again, back at the cabin, and Brooke is still a little scared of what has happened this evening. I would like to remind everyone also that she had to shower off mud camo, basically, from eating shit in the mud and the rain, like, 25 minutes ago, which, A, she's not supposed to be able to do, and Margaret will say as much in about 5 minutes. And then, B, now she has brand new hair and makeup, as though the mud camo never happened, which wouldn't happen, A, in the span of 20 minutes, and B, at all. I don't think that person would go do hair and makeup after taking a shower at 10 p.m. after getting chased by a serial killer and falling in the mud at a camp. But she is. She's got her full face beat on. The boys are all chill again, and now the TV has caught Brooke's attention, and this is what's going to piss me off. It is, again, this is the same day as the last episode, and there is a, not the actual news story, but a promo for an upcoming news story later this evening at 11 p.m. that is going to be about the murder of the gas station guy, which happened roughly an hour ago, maybe? How the fuck did somebody discover that that guy was dead already? He works by himself and lives by himself in a really, like, secluded, really off-the-beaten-path gas station in the middle of the woods. was not getting a lot of foot traffic, I don't think. And even if someone discovered, happened to show up at the gas station, he was in the back of the station working on his car, under the car, when he got fucking owned. So, like, someone would have had to show up to the gas station as soon as Mr. Jingles left and then been like, well, no one's here. I'm going to go snoop around the place. And then found this dude crushed and was like, this is a murder. We have to phone it in.
And it'd be like one thing if it had been long enough that it's like, oh, he smelled the corpse. But like, this is all happening over the course of like 2 hours. So like, no.
Yeah. I do genuinely mean like no more than like an, because it was nighttime when the guy was killed. And it's just like still nighttime and it's not 11 p.m. No. yet. So like, you know,
it's because maybe like Mr. Jingles sucks and left like bloody footprints out to his car with the caltrops and every, you know,
yeah.
Or maybe he called and he was just like, yeah, you probably want to get up here or don't. I don't give a shit.
Yeah,
that seems to be like his level of drive.
Hello, police. My name is Mr. Bingles. I think I'm on murder. Like, you know,
he can't. He physically cannot stop the jingling noise from happening, and the cops are like, "Hey, what's that noise in the background?" Oh, it's bingling.
Nothing. My dog ate my keys.
Yeah,
it's fine.
So we get like the whole like teaser for this story that's about to be at 11. And the reporter is talking to the sheriff, and the sheriff is like, yeah, this is a murder. And right now we have no motive or suspects. I'm like, hey, did nobody tell you about the murder guy who escaped from the psych ward that was headed that direction? Did nobody clue you in?
Maybe our doctor analog should have called that in before driving up here.
Yeah. Also, no motives or suspects. It's he killed him like Michael Myers kills that one guy, and just like kind of like he could have been an accident. His death could have looked like an accident. It doesn't look like a murder. And also, like, no shit, you don't have any motive or suspects. You just found this dude like 15 minutes ago. Like, if you had a motive and suspects already, I would be extremely impressed. Like, extremely impressed, given that this is 1984 and he probably doesn't even have CCTV on premises. Like, there's no, what are you talking about? And they're like, this is going to be our news story at 11. And the reporter is like, do you think this is related to the Night Stalker? And the sheriff is like, no comment. And I'm like, that's weird. You could just say, like, no. Like, you're not in LA, so why would it be the Night Stalker? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I would just, if I was a sheriff, I'd be like, well, probably not, because he's not active in this area.
Could
probably
it have been
not.
Jack the Ripper somehow?
Yeah.
Is that possible? No. Yeah. Hey, you don't know. No, who knows, right?
Yeah, no comment. And Brooke interprets this as, oh no, the Night Stalker killed that guy. Okay. And she's like, everybody, did you see what was on the TV? And like, everyone's like, what are you yapping about now? And then they turn and look at the TV and they're like, oh yeah, I love this one. And it's the Where's the Beef commercial. Because they really want us to know that it's 1984. They Googled what happened in 1984 and just took whatever popped up.
I said it before, but I'll say it again. Stranger Things was not this, like, big about it either. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was like they'd pull up something like a Rubik's Cube quick, and they wouldn't say, look, everybody, a Rubik's Cube. But this is, like, so in your fucking face. Like, where's the beef? Just like the lady. Yep.
It would be so much cooler if instead they just, like, had the, like, weird rap song single they recorded featuring Coyote McCloud, a famous, I think, Nashville DJ. Sorry, not Dallas. That, if they were like, oh, shit, is that Coyote McCloud featuring Clara Peller doing Where's the Beef? I'd be in again. I'd be like, okay, that's insane. That's an insane pull. But instead, they're just like, hey, that ad was on TV, which, like, big whoop. Okay. get a new one. If you're going to be a little freak about referencing the 80s, at least show me you give a shit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, also, like, that ad was airing in 1984, and I don't think people, like, were that hard-pressed for entertainment that they're like, yeah, I love that advertisement. Like, yeah, we, like, retroactively look back on it like, haha, that was a silly kind of iconic commercial. But, like, people in 1984, I don't think would be like, yeah, that's the good stuff.
I think you had, like, it was a little corny. So, like, Peter was like, you know, they made T-shirts of everything in the 80s. Yeah. So, like, I don't even know if it was because of the Where's the Beef thing. Because, like, you could, I had one. This is, like, my weird 80s confession of, like, a spray-painted Bart Simpson with, like, red eyes and, like, I don't know if he had tequila or a blunt, but he was just like, I'm high, man, or some shit. I don't remember. You know what I mean?
That's
it's
the,
like,
coolest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt the aura from 20 scrolls away. That was very powerful. Yeah, it's like one of those,
like, all that.
Like the SpongeBob as a gangster type T-shirts. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, hell no. SpongeBob a damn pimp. Exactly.
Yeah. So they're like, yeah, we love this commercial, as if that could possibly be what Brooke's freaking out about. And she's like, no, the news just said that they think that there was a murder. That, first of all, there was a murder at the gas station we stopped at on the way here, which is, like, the only place of business on the road here. So, like, clearly someone was traveling this road and did a murder. And also, they think that it might be the Night Stalker, who is the guy who attacked me yesterday.
Shut up, Brooke.
Yeah, shut up, Brooke. Shut up.
You're so full of shit. God damn it. We get it. Oh, I was attacked by the Night Stalker. Grow up. Yeah. That was like 20 hours ago.
We're all over it. Like, you should get over it because we're all over it. And Xavier's like, okay, so is this guy a different guy than the Mr. Jingles that just called you on the phone at the end of the last episode? But he's, like, being sarcastic. And I'm like, she was attacked by the real serial killer, the Night Stalker, 24 hours ago. Regardless of whether you believe that Mr. Jingles is real, like, she was attacked by a serial killer who explicitly said he was going to hunt her down and find her.
Right. Also, like, even if you think she's full of shit, have some sympathy for the poor, nice, pure girl who was just attacked by a serial killer. Maybe be like, hey, it's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. Like, you know, not be like, fuck you.
I know.
you get over it.
It doesn't work in either direction, because she has like reason that she isn't just like the paranoid person everyone's dismissing. But even though they have reason to dismiss her, like, you would still kind of be like, okay, maybe it is that. And then whisper, like, I think she's just kind of traumatized. You know what I mean? Like, you would be like, stupid. Like, no. You know, like, it doesn't work. Like, God damn it.
Yeah, they treat her like, I don't know, they treat her like they simultaneously know that she has a lot of trauma that could hypothetically be causing her to hallucinate or, like, make up, like, fears in her mind, which would be normal because she was just attacked by a serial killer. But they also simultaneously just straight up don't believe anything she says, period, as though that doesn't matter. Like she makes shit up all the time. Like, she just does this. This is just what Brooke does.
And they don't know her either, but, you know.
Yeah, they don't really know her either. That's the other thing, is, like, she's kind of new to the group. Margaret's like, it's my turn to show up to the co-ed cabin. And she's very mad that they're hanging out together after dark, the boys and the girls. And Brooke's like, hey, Margaret, I think we might be in danger. Let me start telling you about it. And Margaret's like,
maybe
no,
you're
thank
in
you.
Danger.
Yeah.
Piece of shit. I'm not in danger. Yeah. I've got this. I'm holding the fort down. You know what? If anyone comes, you tell them to find me.
Yeah. She's like, I extremely have that dog in me. Like, she's literally like, square up. Show me them. Let me see them. Bring out your best warriors.
I'm a hunting dog. Yeah. I'm going to flush that shithead out.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? Frankly, I wish more horror, like, characters had this vibe of, like, fuck it, we ball. YOLO. Bring Freddy Krueger to me. See what happens. I can't wait. Like, I wish a bitch would.
There's that one guy in Jason Takes Manhattan. Remember, like, Friday the 13th 8, where he's, like, punching Jason on the rooftop, yeah, and then, like, he gets tired as Jason's right at the edge, which always pissed me off, because I'm like, just one more would have done it. But then, like, he's like, all right, man, let's see what you got. And then Jason, like, hits him once and knocks his head off, and, like, it comes, like, clean off and ends up in a cop car, but that's a whole different thing. But, you know, it's like, yeah, you very rarely get that I'm gonna fuck this guy up kind of thing, you know? And
yeah,
it usually gets not that. But yeah, I can fuck with Margaret's, like, yeah, let's do this kind of
or Busta Rhymes, who just scolds Michael Myers and yells at him and then does some karate at him. Yeah. Bring me more of these characters.
I forgot about that. That's right, yeah.
That's Busta Rhymes is by far the best part of that movie. And he proves...
Was that
H2O, I think, I believe.
I think it was H2O, yeah, yeah. Sorry, anyway.
And he proved my theory, which is that if you just, like, tell Michael Myers no, no one's done that. Like, he just tells Michael Myers, like, get the fuck out of here. And Michael's like, oh, my bad. And then he leaves. Like... why aren't more people doing this? Why aren't more people just yelling at Michael Myers and making him feel bad?
You probably think, like, I can't deal with this guy. Look at that. Like, coming in with that mask, like,
Yeah.
You know, like, but, yeah, no, he figured it out, I guess. He cracked the code.
Yeah, and also karate. You have to
throw
some karate in there.
Where's the hockey game, Casey Jones?
Like, yeah. Oh, nice hockey mask, idiot. Like, you just have to kind of yell at him a little bit, and it's probably fine. Like, honestly, it would have worked for Jason, too, probably, because he's got, like, being told what to do issues. So, like, just kind of yell at him a little and they'll probably just stop. No one ever just tries that. They're always like, oh no, you're gonna stab me or whatever. Anyway, Margaret's like, get the fuck out of the cabin, boys. She's like, the boys only shower at night, no exceptions. And I'm like, you made an exception 15 minutes ago. Literally 15
also,
minutes ago.
These are the adults. They don't have to follow those rules. Those are for the teens. Those are for the campers. Again, as someone who has worked as a camp counselor, yes, you have different rules because you're the adult. So you're allowed to shower whenever you want.
I'm now realizing, I don't have any notes about this because I'm just now having this thought. The last season was Apocalypse. Yeah, like, we didn't jump around in order. Like, it was Apocalypse. This is now the second one in a row, the second, like, season in a row. Where,
yeah, I was,
like,
thinking this earlier.
A main female, like, not antagonist, not protagonist, just, like, kind of neutral character who is more, like, antagonistic towards the main cast, says no fucking. There will be no fucking. Like, they're very, like, adamantly anti-fucking. It's very weird to have two of those in a row.
like, Venable at least, like, had some kind of veneer of, like, people who follow my orders and, like, a killer robot, I guess, or something. But, like, this is just more like, what if I fire you from the job that I can't fire you from because you're literally the only people who showed up to work here and you've got me, but I swear you better not, you know?
Yeah, it's very weird. It's such a weird, like, they keep doing this, and they keep doing, like, evil mom who smokes weed. Like, that's another one that they keep doing. They have really weird characters. I think they forget that they write those characters in previous seasons, and, like, no one bothers to tell them. And then they just end up writing them again because they think they're, like, a new character. But then they're like, oh, whoops, that was a character we already wrote. Anyway, as they're leaving and closing the door, Montana, like, murmurs under her breath that Margaret's a bitch. And then she cracks open a beer and she's like, oh, we got to make sure Margaret gets laid or it's going to be a long summer. And then they start to have, like, kind of a heart to heart, Montana and Brooke, about, like, Brooke's PTSD in general. And she makes a joke about a stranger grabbing her boob outside of Sam Goody, which was... like, traumatizing for her, I guess.
I think I kind of read it as she was being sort of ditzy and just like, I know what trauma is like, and then it's supposed to, like, play the scene for you know.
It's Girls. It's like the dumb character from Mean Girls. Like, she's saying something stupid, but, like, her intention is that she's trying to relate to Brooke, but she doesn't have anything like comparable. So she's like, yeah, one time someone honked my boob and it scared me.
And then they had to throw in the 80s reference outside of Sam Goody. Yes. Like, all right, yeah. I get it. God damn it. But yeah.
We need you to know it's 1984.
I was getting something for my Discman. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So you might think, well, Brooke, certainly her worst moment was getting attacked by Richard Ramirez, real serial killer. Well, buckle up, dumbass. It turns out, no, she has more trauma. This little lady rolling zeros. Not one.
Real quick, I just want to say, do you ever really like a song and then some dog shit happens that plays that song and you're like, you fucker, how dare you? Anyway.
Yeah, we bought a lot of licensed music for this season, and we're going to use it, goddammit. We're going to fucking use it. So the way that we lead into this Brooke lore that we're about to get is, like I said, Montana's kind of having, like, a heart-to-heart with Brooke where she's like, I'm going to be the only person who doesn't gaslight you, queen. And she's like, listen, like, she's coming at it from a rational perspective of, like, sometimes she tells a story about how when she was six, her mom sent her to fat camp and it traumatized her because she was six and she was scared and, like, didn't know where she was. So she kept imagining, like, monsters in the shadows and stuff like that, like a kid would. And, like, her point is that when you are looking for things to be afraid of, or you are like you're already thinking of things that will be scary, you're going to see those things because you're looking for them. And that makes sense. That's like that is a good point for that character to make. It is Montana, unfortunately. So it is more played for comedy than anything else. But then they have Brooke look at the camera / Montana and go, you don't have to imagine the worst if it's already happened. Like, it's a fucking soap opera. And then we get a flashback. It's flashback time, baby. We love flashbacks. Do you want to tell them what song is playing, Slow Beef?
It's not yet. That's the part that I hate, is that it starts out. Oh, sorry, go ahead. You got it.
Oh, I was just going to say, it starts with Brooke walking down the aisle at her wedding, and she's up at the altar and is explaining, oh, this was Joey, he was the first and only boy I'd kissed, and we were up at the altar, and he seemed a little nervous, and he could be jealous at times, but I thought it was charming and romantic, which, like many such cases, it's never. Right. It's always wrong. So she's up there, they start reading the
vows,
you know, the vows, thank you. And when it's his turn to say I do and read his vows, he just kind of clams up and doesn't say anything, and his best man leans forward and is like, come on, man, you want this, you want to do this. And then he and then we get the craziest shit on the planet, which is the groom-to-be turns around and goes, I saw you at her place last night, which, like, come on, man.
We should have like, had this conversation earlier, I think. Yeah. This was a conversation for this morning, I think. Maybe not right now.
All right, he brings it up at the altar, and then she's like, I didn't want to see you the night before our wedding to jinx it, but I was scared, so I asked your friend to come over and stay the night. He just stayed on the couch. Nothing happened. He's like, yeah, bro, nothing happened. They're having this conversation at the altar. And, like, you'd also think that, like, the friend would be like, hey, Mac, just so you know, I'm going to go over to, you know what I mean? Like, or whatever, you know? But, like, none of that's happened. Somehow the groom has seen it and has decided, you know what, like, I don't believe it. And then, like, and then he, like, shoots Sam and Brooke's dad and then himself. And then fucking White Wedding from Billy Idol starts playing. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, it does not fit. I get you're at a wedding. Yeah. I get it's an 80s song. It doesn't fucking work. Like, what are you doing? Fuck!
And before he shoots her, he does a big, I don't think you deserve to wear white.
Oh,
and
God, like, I blocked that out.
It's so overwrought, and it's truly just, to me, my reaction to this was, damn, Brooke, why do you get two murderer traumas? Like, why do you, like, hey, damn, I don't think we needed all that. I think just the one was good. It's cool. And the real man, Richard Ramirez, tried to kill you. That's plenty. I don't need another one.
The other thing is, like, we're selling it as, like, being, like, funny. This scene is, like, insane. Like, if this was in, like, another movie, it would be, like, an insane, it's like a Red Wedding type shit of, like, he, like, has the gun and he's all amped up and he, like, has the gun to her head and is like, I don't believe you, Brooke, and she's like pleading for her life, which is horrifying because he's just shot his best man and her dad, and then he shoots himself instead. That's fucking insane. They have a similar like storyline kind of in Euphoria, and it's played extremely as being like intense and like distressing, but they play it as like comedy, and I'm like, no, we probably needed to get... This was a year ago, by the way, that this happened to Brooke. We probably needed to get Brooke into therapy, if we're being honest. Brooke probably needed some kind of therapy after this happened.
But there's also, like, no need for this. Like, it doesn't... It's not a horror... Excuse me. Like, a horror movie trope. It's not a scary scene. It's just weird. Because, like, yeah, like, she already has trauma from before. Like, I don't get the point of this, any of this flashback.
The point of this episode is trauma. We're going to have a conversation about that later that's going to be fucking baffling.
God.
It's going to make everybody really uncomfortable, including us. So that's the flashback.
I've decided to befriend Richard Ramirez, the real man and real serial killer. He's going to be my little buddy.
I think you meant to say, I am going to seduce the real man, Richard Ramirez, with the tantalizing prospect of potentially seeing my feet. Anyway, that will be next episode.
Whoa. She didn't bring up the feet, to be clear.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Very funny fan fiction to write about Richard Ramirez that he was into feet.
Give him a fetish. Yeah. Next time, make it like way wilder. Be like, hey, can I puff you up like a big balloon?
Can you put on this furry outfit?
Let's go a little wild. Yeah. Like, if we're gonna have fun with it, let's have fun with it.
We will get there in the next episode, and I promise it will be just as funny when we get there, because it is insane, and it's part really of a conversation. That's not even the most insane part of the conversation that happens for some reason. But anyway, that was Brooke's flashback, and they cut back out of the flashback, and they're still sitting on the bed talking, and Montana is, like, getting mad on Brooke's behalf, like, yeah, fuck that guy, he was shitty and misogynistic and, like, was mad that you were having sex and, like, getting off without him, he wanted to control you and whatever, and Brooke's like, no, I didn't cheat on him, but nobody believes me, and then she goes, I believe you, queen, and then tries to make out with her, which I'm like... I shoot your shot, queen, I guess. Like, dudes do this all the time. Women in male-dominated fields, you know? Like, go for it. But then Brooke's like, no, thank you. I have to go out into the woods. And if the show was good, they would have just started making out, and then they would be girlfriends for the rest of it. But that's not what happens. Montana just isn't very picky, it turns out. Montana's like, yeah, if it breathes, it's fine.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they have the same character kind of speed running through the cast as much as you can. Like, they're all a bunch of horny teens, right? They didn't just have to have Montana be like, I'm carrying this on my shoulders.
I'm the horniest.
Liz, when you, me, and a couple of our friends played through fucking Stardew as a co-op, and you were the person who just ran through handling all the relationships, so we were like putting you in our coat and smuggling you across town so no one would see.
Yeah. Also, I just want to say,
that's Montana's role.
That was a stressful position to be in. Fucking the whole town, being the town bike, was stressful. This is too stressful for Montana. She's got other problems to be dealing with.
Yeah, meanwhile, Mr. Jingle's just off fishing the entire time.
Yeah.
Having a cool-ass evening.
Making a caltrop or two and getting chased by a psychiatrist, kind of.
Where did you find caltrops? Wait, you don't just have those.
That's the guy he crazy. Killed.
Like, imagine if he just pulled out like a battle axe, like a medieval battle axe, and everyone, like, no one was like, where did you get that? Because that's what a caltrop is to me. It's just like, why do you have caltrops? They don't have those at summer camp, bro. Those don't come in utility trucks. Like, where did you get a caltrop?
I think what it is I think this has happened. I can't pull any like exact things to mind right now, like examples of previous seasons or previous episodes, but I think something that happens a lot in specifically American Horror Story is they find a prop that they don't know what it is, but they're like, yeah, this looks like the kind of thing we need for this scene. We need something to pop a tire. Let's look through our props department. What do we have? And they have like, oh, this thing looks sharp, but they don't know what it is.
Well, and like, caltrops are used to break tires still, to be clear. But like, why does he have one?
One really big one.
That's the other thing. Yeah, the other thing about caltrops is like, you generally don't put one down. The reason their design is a tetrahedron is wonderful is because you can just throw 100 of them and they'll all land with the point up. The point is that you can cover, they're a denial of area tactic, so you put out a bunch of them. It's not just like you're like, all right, I have a feeling if I were driving a car, I would go right here. Like, that's not, you're not trapped or dead by daylight. You don't have to call out where the fucking truck is going to drive over.
That's actually the scariest thing about Mr. Jingle is his strategic intellect, you know?
Yeah. He's always gaming.
Always eight moves ahead, except for the jingling keys that alert you to his presence. That's
he
the
likes
one
those.
Flaw.
That's his Achilles heel. It's because he likes the jingling too much, so he can't part with them.
Three episodes from now, like, a robot will have jingling keys and be like, aha, I built that an hour ago, and then kill somebody.
Yeah.
To keep in mind going forward, because, like, this is probably where we're going to cut this episode, because there's a ton more to cover. There's only 9 episodes this season, which just means they're hurrying even more.
Mm-hmm.
There are 2 things that everyone knows about Mr. Jingles. One, he jingles, because he has a lot of keys. 2, he loves keys and presumably will collect them on site. Nobody
like
remembers this at any point. It's insane. And just keep in mind whenever anybody's like, damn, where'd my keys go? And like, like, credit where credit's due, I think having a killer who, like, loves cutting phone lines and stealing keys is, like, weirdly effective. They just, like, forget about that and have him cut off ears, too, which is just, like, pick a lane.
Yeah. It's... boy, do we have such sights to show you in the back half of this episode. Like, this has been relatively low-key up until now. If anything, all the stuff we've talked about is, like, fairly normal in comparison to what is going to start happening immediately after this scene and for the rest of the episode. I guess maybe her flashback was a bit out of pocket, but, like, it kind of seemed like they were trying to do it campy on purpose. I don't know. It's that whole flashback was weird. It had such a weird energy to it that was distressing, but not probably in the way that they intended for it to be.
I am going to try and keep in mind if this wedding scene is literally ever relevant. Because I cannot imagine it will be. I can't imagine.
I genuinely don't remember, but I will say that in watching this back, I would totally had forgotten about this. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, what the fuck is this? And then the white wedding came out. Oh, right. I hated that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to say, I'm not going to like say what it is, but, and I might be misremembering. I'll know when the time comes because we'll watch that episode. I want to say it kind of has a payoff, but it's not like, it's not what you think it's going to be. It does have like a, I'm doing extremely air quotes, a payoff later. And it's going to be one that's going to make you go, that this feels like it could have been an email, frankly. didn't need to be a meeting. Could have been an email. But I guess we'll see when we get there, because I could be misremembering it, because I frankly didn't remember this motherfucker was named Mr. Jingles until we watched the episode. So it... Who knows? Who knows what I've misremembered? Also, they ripped off like 85 movies, and I could just be remembering one of those movies. Who knows?
Yeah. So thank you for listening, everybody. And until next time, Satan.
Oh, no, Satan, Richard Ramirez is on the podcast. What the heck? Oh, no, wait. I don't have keys with me. Sorry. That's all I had. But anyway. Oh, okay.